like to open it up to questions here. Any thoughts or observations about what I've spoken on or on your own journey and your own path?
I have a trait that doesn't fit with my personality.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I can figure is it. And so the question is, if we have things that we know must come from past life, what's the best way to try to work through that or overcome something like that?
Some people go into regression and hypnotic states and that kind of thing in order to recall previous lifetimes. My own experience, and I think the better way, is that whatever is required will come to you. As you enter into deepened states of meditation, these thought patterns, these behavior patterns, will spontaneously come up to you, whether you want them to or not. Many times when we don't want them to, but there they are. We can know that this doesn't relate to or connect to anything in this lifetime. It just doesn't make sense that I have this. And yet, there it is, and it's a very strong something. And so you can just take it, okay, this is something that is coming up from the deep reservoir of my subconscious mind. Now, how do I go about working with that is the question. There's nothing automatic about recovering a memory that just makes it go away. There's an example of a woman and a very great soul who Mother met, Elizabeth Hike. And she wrote a book called Initiation, and in that book she had a detailed recall of a lifetime in ancient Egypt. And she wrote the book about that, and it's a very, very interesting book. But Mother felt that she had become so involved with this previous lifetime, it was interfering with her growth in this lifetime. Because some of the things that had awakened inside of her awakened certain kind of desires and ways of approaching things that weren't serving her too well. So it's not always beneficial to go back into these things. And occasionally, and there have been times when people have been regressed back into previous lifetimes, one in particular that I can think of, where the woman had been insane in a previous lifetime, and it practically drove her to the brink of insanity in this lifetime. So it's not something that is just something to mess around with. Whatever is coming to you in terms of either present-day behaviors or thoughts and memories that come up to you, one of the things you can do is, and I think is a very effective of helping to purify these things, is in your mind's eye, see a pathway moving from your ajna, your third eye point, into a flame of light about 14, 16 inches in front of you. See it moving into that golden white light, and then see the light take it and take it away. And as often as it comes up, the memory of it, the impulses, the thoughts around that, see it, give it an avenue to go, to move into. Most of us, when we entertain a thought, we either try to drive it back down. I don't want to think about that. I don't want to be like that. I'm just going to push it back down. And as Freud so cleverly discovered, if it gets pushed down here, it's likely to pop up over there in different ways. So just kind of repressing it doesn't really do the trick. The other thing that we most often do is we put it on a merry-go-round, and we think about it, and we think about it, and think about it, but it doesn't go anywhere, and we don't get rid of it. In fact, if anything, we're adding more energy to it. So to give it an avenue for it to leave, to move into the light, and to surrender it to the light, let it go. Let it go. Let it move through and into that light. And even as I'm describing it, and as you're thinking about this problem, and you see it as going into this light and surrendering it, letting go, what do you experience as you think about that? Mm-hmm. So you actually, if you think about the subconscious as the basement, and the conscious mind as the first floor, and the superconscious mind as the upstairs. Got a nice skylight up there, and everything, in order to purify the subconscious, it has to come out through the main door. So you put it in the burning barrel. You let it come out. And the main thing is we get upset with ourselves when we feel like it's going to be too much coming up, or I don't know what to do with it. And maybe I'll get stuck in it, or it just won't ever go away. But when we know we can do something with it, when we know we can put it into the burning barrel, then we don't mind so much. So whenever you see those things come up inside of you, see them going right into the light, give them some place to go. It allows the subconscious mind to get purified, and it gives it to the light, and knowing that whatever you put in the light that is true and is real will remain with you. It's a purifying light that will take away all of the disparate metals and other kind, but only leaves the pure gold. That pure gold of whatever is true, whatever is real, will remain. So you can't give away something that's really valuable or that you, it's really essential to your being. So try that and see how that goes in terms of giving some place for it to go. But you can see the tendency to either hang on to it by repressing it or putting it on the merry-go-round, and it just goes around and around and around. It drives us crazy. A lot of energy expended for absolutely nothing at all. So give it some place to go. And then if it's required for some memory to come up, how did this start? Where did this? It's part of the cleansing process. And I've had that happen around different issues that I've had in my own life. And something has come up, and okay, there that is. And you can put that into the flame as well to see it, but it'll help explain why this has come about, if that's necessary in the releasing. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you just don't have to go there. It's not something worth going into. If it is, it'll come spontaneously. And then you can do something with it. You can let it move through. Some people, and we all see it, people have different fears. Why do I have that fear? Why do I have that fear of heights or fear of snakes? Or fear? I've never had an experience in my lifetime where that's been a problem. Or desires will come up, and they'll just seem like there's something out of left field in a certain way. Why is that there? It's not something that I want. And yet, there it is. There it is. So being able to surrender it and let it go into the light. A very something that God gave me, and it's a very powerful method. You can do it retroactively too, which is an interesting thing to do. If you have memories come up from this lifetime, times that you regret, oh man, why did I say do that? Why did I do that? Why didn't I do something better at the time? All those kinds of things. We all have them. If the thought comes up, say you're sitting and meditating, and suddenly you have this thought come up, give it into the light. Just see it passing right on through. When I first started meditating in high school, I'd been on the wrestling team. And there was one match in my senior year in the district championships that I lost by 1 point. I'd be sitting on my meditation blanket, minding my own business, you know, meditating. The next thing I know, I'd be reliving this wrestling match, and my body would just be straining like this, you know, and suddenly I get aware, and I go, what am I doing to myself here? I'm supposed to be meditating, and there I'm reliving this match over and over again, you know. I didn't know this method at the time. I wish I did. It would have saved me a lot of trouble.
Can you do that with a noisy mind too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so with thoughts, the ajna is usually the best place to have it. If there are feelings, emotions, physical sensations, even physical pain, other things like that, see it passing right through the body, wherever it's occurring, seeing it passing right in through the light. So say that you're sitting and you're having some pain in your hip or your shoulder or some other place, see that pain passing right on through into the light, into the light. Over 80% of pain that we have is produced by the mind, is produced by the mind. It's anticipation. Will this get worse? How long will this go on? Look at how long I've been doing this. So it's remembrance of the past. And so if we give it some place to go to and don't give it more energy, find that most pain is very manageable. It's our tug of war, it's our resistance with pain that makes it so painful. 80% of the pain at least comes from that. So give it a place for it to go, see it pass right on through. So thoughts through the ajna, feelings, emotions through the heart, pain just can come right through the body, right into the light. So if you have a very active mind, and it's just spinning, spinning, snap, oh, this, or this, 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 and I could do that, and what about that over there, and what about that, and suddenly we're, you know, it's faster than light. We're over there, we're over there, we're over there, up and down, all over the place. So we can try to fight that. Good luck. You know? Or we can just simply see it passing through into the light. Just open up a channel and just see it passing through. Don't attach yourself to it. You're neither attracted to or repulsed by any of the thoughts. They are just thoughts. They're just... Until you teach your mind that it's all right. It's all right to let them go. It's all right to surrender them. And once an inner part of yourself gets the message, oh, I can just let those go. I can let them go. So much, particularly in meditating, so much of the active mind is really busy work to keep us separated. And when we examine it, we'll find out that there's an underlying fear. What if I go deeper with this? What will happen to me? Will I be? Will I exist? I mean, these deepest fears will come up for us. And so unless we keep ourselves on that field, we'll never get an opportunity to go through these. These are like, in submarine language, there are thermal layers of the ocean, and they are just like different levels of different floors. You can't see through them, you can't hear through them. And so if you think of your consciousness as going through these different thermal levels, and you get, and there's just this kind of invisible something that won't let you pass through. You approach it and you bounce right back up. I went through a long time when I had a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. I thought, this is crazy. Where is this coming from? I don't get it. But there it was. And sometimes I wanted to jump off my meditation plank and just run away and never come back. I thought, this is crazy. You know, there's nothing obviously here that's creating this sense of anxiety. It was one of these thermal layers. And I had to keep working it. I had to keep going until I dropped down through into the next level. Into the next level. Now, one thing I realized that every time we approach one of these things, the resistant forces get worse. Stronger. More active. And I came to know over time that if I was really struggling, I was really standing on the precipice of something new. Something greater was coming. And what let me know that? That I felt the least spiritual, that I felt I had the least self-mastery or control over my thoughts or anything else. And I knew that I was ready to move through this next layer. But you can see how cunning, how powerful, how devious the mind can get as you try to go through these different layers. And suddenly anything and everything sounds like a better idea rather than moving through these different layers. And just know that's the same path trod by every single individual who's ever gone that way.
Is there spiritual growing beyond thought?
Absolutely. Thought is very limiting. consciousness, thought is a subset of consciousness. And the constant thinking of the mind, that constant commentary that you have going on in your mind, that's just ego mind. That's just ego mind. And so much of it is wasted. Wasted energy, wasted thought. It doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't take us anywhere. Consciousness is beyond thought. And in order to experience ourselves as in the pure state of consciousness, the pure state of the I am, we have to go beyond the chatter of the mind. And the chatter of the mind is what keeps us going there. The emotions that come up, the desire nature that comes up, or the fear, those are the kind of really the two sides of the ego coin, desire nature and fear. And those two things will keep us connected to the ego mind. So, for instance, with the Hong Sa is like a saw that we're sawing through a piece of wood. And we're working it. We're applying the right amount of pressure, not too little, not too much. Apply too much pressure, it bogs down. It binds up. It binds the saw up. Apply too little pressure, there's no wood getting cut. It's just skimming along the surface. So just using it, and allow it to cut through the wood, applying the right amount of pressure. Having the observing mind, letting these things pass into the flame. Just letting them pass. Breathing. Letting them pass through. Purifying the unconscious mind until it's emptied out. Now, if we were only doing this as human beings, it'd be a forever kind of a thing. But there's grace operating in us. And the grace is that perfect, pure self that is inside of you that's awakening. And it's helping you. And it's working with you. Master used to say that getting realization is one-third our own effort, one-third the Guru's grace, and one-third is God's grace. And so all these working together make it possible. So you have to apply yourself, but also don't think it's just you. It's just my tiny little mind in here, my tiny little will. That's all I've gotten. It's going up against big old Goliath. Huh? Grace is operating through you. God is awakening inside of you. It's already made that intention. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And so you feel and look for that grace operating inside of you. Open yourself to it. Don't feel that you're all alone up against it, the big Goliath. So those two things, seeing it pass through, letting it go, and feeling that there's an inner grace working with you, a power and intelligence greater than yourself.
Can you call on that?
Absolutely. Over and over again. Not just once. If once is enough, all right, but we can call on it. And make demands of it. When I first read Yogananda's demands, prayer demands, it shocked me a little bit. But God, you must do this. You must do it. And that came from Sri Yukteswar. He said, don't go to God as a beggar. You are a rightful inheritance. You have a rightful inheritance. Demand it. Demand it. You must awaken yourself in me. You must guide my thoughts. You must purify this mind. You must do this. I claim this as my rightful inheritance. I don't come to you as a beggar. And when you think about it, that clarity of mind, the power that comes through that, when you are willing to unleash it. But at first, when I first read that, I thought, oh, that's kind of strong. Not sure if I feel that way. So there's some growing into it at first. But to feel that you have a right and that you cannot awaken without that inner grace working inside of you. Nobody has ever done it on their own. It's not possible. The ego cannot transcend the ego, nor can the ego kill the ego. Only through grace can that happen. And when the ego dies, all that means is the tiny little bubble that separated you from all the rest of the ocean dissolves. And you expand, and just like the light exercise that we did at the beginning, you expand into that omnipresence. And when you do, you don't feel like you become somebody else. You really feel like you've arrived home. This is it. This is who I've known myself to be, at least intuitive, all this time. And I've yearned for it. I've so desired to return home. I've so much not wanted to be relegated to this tiny little human ego self with a tiny little human ego mind that has these things that go around and around and around. I'm so tired of that. It feels like a prison to me. When you really feel that way, then you're willing to let it go. But when you stand on that precipice, it can be frightening because you don't know. Will there be somebody there to catch me? You know, will I be all right? Will I continue to exist? These kinds of things. Very strong, primal kinds of things that come up. And so we have to work on surrendering them, letting them go, letting them go. So very definitely call upon that. Demand it.
Do we have to live another life?
No. Only if your karma, which all karma is, you think about, I mean, we don't have to go far to discover what that is. When you sit down to get quiet and to meditate, all the things that are revolving around in your mind and in your body and in your emotions, that's your karma. It's the things that we've sent out from us and they cycle right back through. And we're on this wheel that's constantly turning. And we're facing ourselves. We're facing the things that we've done in previous lifetimes. We're facing all the things that we've set into motion. And the image that was given to me one time, it's like a speedboat that's cruising across the lake at very high speed. But if you were to cut the motor all at once, what would happen? All those waves, all the wakes that you've been making, would catch up with you. And you'd be in for a pretty rough ride for a while. Bang, 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 bang as those waves. But if you can endure it without hitting the gas again and taking off, eventually that wave action begins to settle down. And if it's been a peaceful lake before you came along and stirred everything up, it would come and it would settle down into total peace. And then that peace would reflect stars, the sun, the moon, the mountains, everything above would reflect it perfectly. That's your consciousness. Cut the engines. Endure the pounding of the mind, all the waves of the mind that hit you. Let's see them pass through into the light, until it gets perfectly calm and at peace. Can that happen? Yes. It's inevitable if you can hold yourself there. But if you hit the gas trying to run away from the waves, what happens? You create more waves. And the longer we run, the more waves we... It's just cause and effect. It's the things that we're putting out that are coming back to us. Until we run that machine down and it's got no more energy to it. You can see how we engaged with it. We have a thought and, oh, I like that. Have another thought, oh, I don't like that. Another thought, oh, I like that. Have another thought, oh, I don't like that. We keep engaging with it. And when we engage with it, we give it more power. We perpetuate it. We have to quit giving it power. It's just a thought. It's just a desire. It's just a fear. It's another one. Oh, I know that.
An illusion.
It's an illusion. I've had it before. Maybe I've had it all my life. I know I'm very familiar with it. Let it pass through. Let it pass through. Who needs it? Why would I want to hang on to it? As if it's my best friend. Tired of it. I want to be done with it. Let it go. And it seems like such an easy thing to do and such a hard thing to do. Because there's something inside of us that keeps grabbing onto it. And that's where we surrender. We keep letting it go. It is. It really, you know, it's such a place to go to because we're so right. You know, we're so self-righteous. I know I'm right. And they shouldn't do that. But it keeps us engaged, you see, because every positive, there's a negative. And what is it that we really can't let go? In most cases, we ourselves have acted badly in the past, and we can't forgive ourselves for it. We can't let it go. So we can't let it go for another person. It's a projection. When we really see life as it is, we see, I've lived those lives. I've been that person. I've said those things, if not exactly that, something like it.
The person that causes the greatest in me, I see myself all the time.
Yeah. And so the way out of it isn't to fight them, because to fight them, I mean, we may be called upon to fight them. There may be times when we're called upon that. But in general, it's letting it go, letting it go. This is the big picture of life. I can see. And I know that when somebody acts that way, I know what kind of a hellish existence inside they have. I know what a price they have to pay because I paid that price. And I lived in that hell. And I know what that's like. And I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And I'm sorry that they're that way. And yet, that's how they're choosing to be in this moment. Now, unless I'm called upon, and I may be, but unless I'm called upon to take action around it, my job is to let it go. Let it go. Let go of my indignation. Let go of my sense of who's right and who's wrong. It's very interesting at times. There's a story called the Ramayana, about the story of Rama. This is the Mahabharata with Krishna. No, I was right the first time. It's the Ramayana, the story of Rama. And there were two gatekeepers to Indra's heaven. And a sage had wanted to get entry into the gateway. And they had been given instructions not to give anybody entry. The sage came up. He is a very highly realized being. He says, I want to come in. They said, no, we can't let you. He says, you're stopping me? I curse you. 1,000 lifetimes in ignorance. Out of my way. Oh, curse. Can't be taken back. So they were given a choice. And they were good. They were good. They were gatekeepers of heaven. Huh? Good angels. But here's the circumstance. So they were given a choice. They said, you can have one lifetime and be the antithesis to Rama, who is the Christ. Judas. And play that role and play it well. And that's it. Or you have 1,000 lifetimes of ignorance. What are you going to do? They said, we'll take the one lifetime. So in this story, they are hated. They're the devil. They play the oppositional force. They're absolutely necessary to the story. And yet they're great beings. And when Rama sees them, they said, oh, look at, they're magnificent. In their evil, they're magnificent. So then who's to say in life what role that individual is playing and why and who they really are? Can we judge? Can we judge? Maybe there's a very specific purpose being worked out by this person being the way that they are. How can we tell? You see? So that's the human limitations of the mind. How far is somebody, you know, somebody may say, oh, I'm so spiritual. I listen to the right music and I play, light the incense and, oh, look at what a spiritual person I am. Look at that fellow over there. He doesn't know anything. One time there was a great sage. He was wandering, Narada, wandering all over the earth thinking. And one day he thought he played the lute and he played songs to God. And he says, oh, I'm thinking of God all the time. I'm the best. I'm sorry. You know, I know it. So Krishna knows this. He says, I think he needs a little lesson here. So he said, so Krishna is talking to him and he says, oh, you're such a wonderful devotee. Yes, I am. He says, there's only one better. One better? Who can that be? So he says, it's this man. He's a woodcutter. A woodcutter? A lowly living on the earth? I mean, Narada can go all through the heavens, everything. So he says, I've got to see this. I've got to see it. So he's got great pride that he's always singing God's name and always. So he goes to see this woodcutter. This woodcutter wakes up in the morning. He says God's name once. And then he goes out and he cuts his wood all day long. Not a high caste job, huh? Very low caste. So he does this. He goes to bed at night. He says God's name once. He lays his head down and goes to sleep. This man, he's greater than me. He said, yes. He says, he's thinking of me all day long. His mind never wanders from me. Not once. And he doesn't think highly of himself. He was shocked. Shocked. So we can't tell from the outer circumstance who's close, who's near, who's far. You can't judge. Not by the outer circumstances, just you can't. You can't. So Papa Ramdas once said he had difficulty being able to distinguish who was completely realized and who was not. To him, everybody was God. So I thought, well, the best course is then just to assume everybody I meet is God realized. that's safest. See God in everybody that you meet.
I have one more question. And I'm taking advantage because it will be another 2 years.
Let's hope not that long.
Is it wrong to use meditation for material things, activities and such?
The better course, you know, Meher Baba said, I'm a merchant prince. Meaning a very high up merchant. He says, if you go to a merchant prince, you don't ask him for a bauble. But if he likes you, he'll give you untold riches.
I got it.
Trust that whatever it is that you need, whatever it is, doesn't mean that we sit on our hands, do nothing, but that whatever we need will come to us at the right time in the right way. Our sole responsibility in life is to keep our attunement with the divine self. Everything flows from that. And then we can let go, because that's just another level of duality to get enmeshed into. And it's endless. We get one, we ask for one thing, we get it, then we want something else, and it's just, it's an endless list. There's no end to it. When we feel satisfied and content with exactly what we have, exactly be at peace with it, and open yourself to the incredible abundance that's flowing to you. I was thinking one time about the golden age. It's said that we go through these different ages, and there's a time when there's a golden age, when there's a high attunement to the divine self. And the idea that we may not see a lot of physical evidence. You know, we look for machinery or buildings or... But you think of a Babaji who's totally content. He can control his body temperature and his environment. He can control his food or not need any food at all. He draws it from the cosmic rays. He may leave no carbon footprint at all. No evidence, really, of ever having lived. Needing very, very little to be completely and totally happy and free. That he would feel that buildings and clothes and all the things that we go after would be a burden. Unnecessary. Where does his happiness come from? It's internally derived. It's through that inner attunement and joy. How wonderful it would be for us to feel that kind of peace, acceptance, contentment. It doesn't mean that you don't have thoughts for how things could grow, be better, that kind of thing. But in the moment, to be completely content with who you are, what you have, to be at peace. Wouldn't that be wonderful? The kingdom of heaven is within you. It's here. It's now. This idea that we die and we go off, it's just, that's a misnomer. It's a ruse. And it's the truth that it's right here. In the Gospel of St. Thomas, it says that the kingdom of heaven is spread all over the earth. But who has the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it? So, receive that. Receive that. Let it in. The kingdom of heaven are those spiritual gifts. Peace, joy, light, wisdom, fullness of being, completeness. Why not? See, it's not far away. The amazing thing is when we awaken to it, we realize it's always been here. One of my favorite sayings of Kabir is, makes me laugh to think of fish swimming in the sea saying that they're thirsty. We're swimming in a sea of ananda, a sea of bliss, and yet we say we're not happy, we have no peace, we have no light, and yet we're in a sea of it. The air is filled with it. It's how I see it. The walls. Everything is vibrating with that divine consciousness, even as you are. I thought I would read. We have New Cross and Lotus Journals, and there's by Swami Satyananda Giri. He is a brother disciple of Yogananda's. In fact, they are childhood friends and grew up together. And he wrote something about Mother Krishnabai and Papa Ram Dass. Was asked to for 25 years of taking the vows of renunciation. Mother Krishnabai did. So I thought it was interesting, and it's beautifully written, but also because Satyananda tied with Yogananda and Swami Ramdas and Mother Krishnabai. So Mother Krishnabai, a true yogini by Swami Satyananda Giri, brother disciple of Yogananda's, written for the Silver Jubilee of Mataji's renunciation, 1955. The sincere devotion and loving touch of the devotees of Swami Ramdas at Bombay roused in me an attraction towards the saint. This led me to Ananda Ashram on one morning of August 1942. The sweet smile on the radiant face of Swamiji made me his own in a moment. Soon after the cordial reception by him, I felt the motherly love and attention of Mother Krishnabai when a cup of coffee was sent by her to me. I had the privilege of staying at the ashram for a few days. As days passed, I could appreciate and feel the loving presence of the mother, the keen caretaker who prefers to remain behind the screen. She, the embodiment of the Divine Mother, is veiled from our eyes, yet her shakti, her power, was reflected alike in the ashram life and discipline. Her keen attention was bestowed on all ashram activities. Her soothing touch healed many a soul in distress, and her selfless service showed her deep devotion to the Lord. She is the supreme mother of the ashram, yet she is so meek, so gentle, and so noble. She keeps herself ever busy with the ashram affairs, yet she remains detached, ever tuning herself with the absolute, with spiritual sweetness within. She is a true yogini, a woman yogi, who has dedicated herself wholly at the feet of the Guru. May her noble, blissful, and dedicated life of love and devotion be the guiding example of womanhood of the perplexed world of these days. Though I had to leave the ashram without previous notice, the loving attention of the mother amidst her heavy duties was shown to me. The divine smile in her profound and tranquil face has made a deep impression on me, which is ever fresh in my mind. I feel myself privileged in joining others to pay homage to Sri Yogini Mother Krishnabai when she completes 25 years of her life of divine consecration at the feet of the Lord, and to invoke all-pervading peace, energy, love, and knowledge in the hallowed name of the Mother Divine. Thought he said that beautifully. And to think of her as ever busy in the ashram as she was from early morning to late at night, in a spirit of detached, yet she remains detached, ever tuning herself with the absolute, with spirit, with spiritual sweetness within. She is a true yogini. High words of praise from a great yogi himself. So as we think on these truths and how we might transform our lives and change them into something better, into something greater, to allow that grace to work within you, to feel the peace, the joy, the love that are part of your spiritual inheritance, and to make them your own. This is the great life we have been called to live and to realize in our day-to-day living. Om, peace, bliss, amen. I would like us to have special prayers for Brad and Emily's new little being coming into the world here as she's pregnant and bringing this soul in. Krishna said that it's a rare privilege for a soul to be born into a yogi's family. So this is a wonderful thing to be brought into a spiritual household in this way. So as we think of this little soul being carried by Emily, just like us to send healing ohms of light, of love, of welcome to this new soul, and for us to softly chant Om 3 times, surrounding this little one in love and light. Please chant with me. Peace, bliss.